I know so many of you. It's so great to see so many of you. And welcome to those of you who I've never met before. I'm going to allow everyone to chat. So you can type in your name and where you are, just say greetings to people. All over the country. Know there's a couple of you here, at least from there, from London, Eastern Europe. Welcome. I know it's evening for you. And also like to invite you each to, once you've done the kind of the check-in with your name and where you are, to write in something of your. Your intention for this week. This is a daily life practice retreat, not a more intensive style. So, just something of your intention, if you wish, just to. You can all read these if you open the chat box. I assume you know this, but some of you may be newer to chat, to Zoom. I love some of these. Find a more easeful and natural connection between on and off the mat practice. Stay immersed in awareness through the day. Make daily life more peaceful. This bridge between on and off the cushion, this is really what the focus is going to be this week. So many of you are mentioning that in the chat. Opening the heart. Stay calm. Slow down, find clarity about priorities. Well, thank you all for being here for this experiment. For me, this is the first time I'm trying something with this many people. And so it's a little bit, you might notice a little bit of bumpiness for me in navigating, looking at the screens and seeing who's, wanting to ask questions and things like that. Yang will be helping me to kind of navigate the questions. Let me see, Yang, why don't you unmute and say hi so you kind of pop up for people.
Hello, everybody. Yeah. It's great seeing you all here. Yeah.
And so she may jump in every now and then and let me know, who's asking questions. Let's see. So just a couple of announcements to begin before we move into the day, the morning. I think the main kind of logistical announcement is that during the Q&A sessions, that primarily I will have, when I'm teaching, I'm going to have the chat disabled. Because that is something that, the way that Zoom does the chat, it pops up a little alert when somebody chats. And if I'm doing a guided meditation or in the thread of a thought, when that pops up, that can often kind of break my train of thought. So I will disable the chat for sections of the time, the teaching. And to support the way the recording works, I'm going to disable your ability to unmute yourselves for sections of the time. That sometimes will orient, if somebody unmutes themselves, it will orient the focus to you. And I'm doing some video recording here for at least my pieces of the teaching. When we shift to Q&A, we won't use the video recording, but just to keep the focus on my face in the recording instead of popping to one of your faces if you unmute yourself will just keep you from unmuting yourselves. So let me get that set up now. Okay. Then the other piece of an announcement, I discovered late yesterday evening, we're still adjusting to, at IMC, we're adjusting to the whole Zoom format and having several Zoom rooms and not scheduling, overlapping each other, things like that. And I discovered that Gil and I both have something scheduled in this Zoom room on Monday morning. So I'm trying to get in touch with him this weekend to figure out how we're going to navigate that. It is possible that the Zoom link might change for this meeting for Monday morning. So Ying, can you tell me, I'm sorry, Yosh. Yosh was our registrar. Yosh, did you send out the Google Doc link or did you send out the... kind of a copy of the Google Doc to people when you sent the information about the Zoom links. Oh, let me allow you to unmute yourself. Here, I will unmute you.
Yes, I sent the link.
Okay, great. So keep track of that document. I'll change the link and I'll put a big highlight if I have to change the link for the morning session. I'm not sure how we're going to navigate this, but it could end up that we have to change our Zoom link. I can't transfer the link to another account. As far as I know, I can't transfer the link to another account. So keep an eye on that in the Google document that Yosh sent out. if you can kind of keep that in your available in your browser, that also is a place where I may post announcements. So for instance, if I make, quote a poem or give a sutta reference or something like that, some people may ask, would you let me know where that comes from, and I'll post those kinds of things in that document. So that'll kind of be a living document during the retreat. Then during the Q&A sessions, we'll have different forms of chatting or different forms of asking questions. In the document that Yosh sent out, the Google document, there's a possibility of submitting questions during the day in advance by clicking on the link for a Google form that will submit the question to me before the session. So you're welcome to submit questions that way. We can also do questions. You can type questions into the chat box. You can raise the blue hand, which is available if you click on participants. There should be a way there that you can raise your hand. Would you check that, verify that for me? I don't see that in mine, but I'm the host, so. Okay, great. So we have some hand raisers. Great. So that is possible. You can do that. So you can play with learning how to do that, raising the blue hand. With this many participants, lower the hands here for those of you who raised the hands. With this many participants, it's easier to use the blue hand, the Zoom hand raise, because that will pop you up, bubble you up to the top of the participants list so I can see who that is and call on you. And as I said earlier, Ying is going to help me to track that piece. If you forget and do this and raise your hand this way, if either Ying or I are not looking at that particular screen, we may miss you. But you can also do that. But if we're not calling on you, and you know, when you're doing that, then try the blue hand. So let's see, any other announcements? So just a couple of, I'm just curious. First of all, I didn't do this earlier. Just how's the volume? Is the volume okay? Thumbs up is okay. I'm seeing quite a few thumbs up. That's good. Thank you. A couple of kind of Zoom etiquette things, and given especially that we're in a meditation kind of setting, it is helpful to arrive couple minutes early, settle in a little bit. These things were in retreat instructions that we sent out, but just as a reminder, settle in a little bit, maybe sit and meditate before the session for a few minutes to arrive and settle. It's helpful too for the community feeling of this to have your camera on, although I do know that for some of you that given particular health situations, or if there's other people in your house and they're going to be moving around behind you, then it can be useful to have your camera off. It is helpful to have your background not have movement in it, or for you to not be moving on camera, or for you not to be moving your device. Because the movement is very visually orienting again for the speaker, and it can have that kind of breaking of the stream of thought kind of thing happen again. So and it also just it just serves to help you, like you're in a meditation hall. You don't tend to be moving around in a meditation hall. So think of this as your meditation hall. On a recent retreat I taught, this is a different form of retreat, and I don't quite feel as much like We're creating a kind of a retreat container in the same way, but there is a little bit of a container that is formed here. And so our meditation hall that we're creating together is as big as, well, about half the planet. You know, that I'm looking into the tiles around the country, around some in Europe. And so we're really creating this large meditation hall and creating your own environment so that it feels simple. And at least while we're on the camera, of course, I mean, your daily life is going to be what it is. And what we're working on is bringing our mindfulness right into whatever that messiness is, whatever that delight is, whatever that confusion is, whatever that focus is, whatever we're doing in daily life, we're exploring bringing our mindfulness into that. But while in this kind of form together, to have some simpler remembering about the simplicity of the stillness of the body and the simplicity of your environment. If you do need to move around, if you, for instance, have to do some walking meditation while listening, then do turn your camera off. It's fine to turn your camera off if you need to, for health reasons or for other reasons. You know, if you need to move around, or if you need to move where you are in your house, please turn your camera off while you're moving your device. That again can be kind of visually. It's like you're on a moving ship or something. A little visually wobbly to see that. And then another important piece, we will be taking each of the morning sessions. We'll have a break about an hour into the session, so that there will be a time for a bathroom break and to get some water or whatever. So we'll take about a 10-minute break at some point in each of these morning sessions. During that time, it's probably a good idea to turn your camera and microphone off. The mics will generally be off in any way, but there have been cases in previous retreats, mostly on the more, I don't know what to call them anymore. You know, they're all Zoom retreats, but some of them are more full day kind of things. So some of the more full day kind of retreats, if somebody leaves the room, leaves the camera on, a partner can walk into the room and be unaware the camera is on. So just be cognizant of turning your camera off if you step away from your computer, and the microphone too. The microphone is helpful to turn that off too. So today, this morning, mostly we'll be orienting to the type of practice that we'll be cultivating for this daily life retreat. The practice that I'm offering this week is inspired by my teacher, Sayadaw Utejaniya. I've been practicing with him. I think I first met him 15 years ago in Burma in 2005. And very quickly I found, or felt that I had found, a teacher who had something unique and profound to offer me. So one of the things I particularly love about this teaching is that the instructions that he offers are the same whether we're in formal practice on the cushion, in formal sitting and walking meditation, or in whatever we're doing, walking, going to the grocery store, having conversations at work, on the computer, in the kitchen, in the garden, whatever we're doing, the instructions don't change. What changes in a way is the kind of experiences that we're having. When we're in silent meditation, especially when we're sitting with our eyes closed, you know, we have a kind of a more limited set of physical experiences. When we're sitting in stillness, when our eyes are closed, we're not engaging with other people. We're not seeing so much. We may often be in a place where there's not a lot of sound, although, again, this is a, you know, not a problem if there's sound in the environment when you're in formal sitting. But, you know, often we do have less things. So we don't usually have to be kind of processing external content while we're sitting in informal meditation. We are working with our inner, whatever's arising in our inner landscape. In our daily lives, we are looking at other kinds of experiences. We're looking at what it means to interact, how we can be aware, mindful while talking, while driving a car or going to the grocery store. And often in our daily lives, the way our minds are functioning is more at the ordinary level. So that's another piece that in our formal practice, the mind often kind of settles below its ordinary way of navigating the world and comes into a, you know, a little bit more, maybe less conceptual. It can come into a less conceptual mode. In our daily life practice, the concepts are a part of how we navigate our lives. Thoughts and concepts in particular are how we navigate what's happening. And so this is a big area. I'd say that in our daily life practice, some of the pieces that we learn to cultivate mindfulness with that we don't tend to emphasize in the formal sitting practice is the awareness of seeing, of conversation, of speaking, of intentional activity, of taking in content of, you know, the conversations or of news or of what's on a ketchup bottle. You know, we're taking in content. And how are we with that? So can we be aware while we are navigating content? So often in our formal practice, we don't engage with content. And that's a place often when we start to engage with content that mindfulness goes out the window because we don't have the familiarity so much with being aware of content and being present with that. So this is a big part of the exploration, is to begin to get familiar with being mindful of different kinds of objects. So in this practice, sometimes it's really awareness of everything that's happening in our experience, body, mind, you know, physical, mental activity. But as the practice goes on, and there is a little bit of an emphasis on being aware of what's happening in our minds, as opposed to, you know, focusing entirely on the body or kind of emphasizing the body in a way that the emphasis does over time shift to what's happening in the mind, being aware of what, especially what our relationship is to what is happening. So this is, as I was talking about being aware of content a few minutes ago, one of the main ways to engage with being aware of content is to know how the content is affecting us, what our relationship to that content is. And so this area, so that's a mental activity. How am I in relationship to this content? I like it, I don't like it, I'm frustrated about it, I'm confused about it, I appreciate it, There's compassion, perhaps, about the content. So there's a range of relationships that we can have to the content, including all the thoughts that we also have that kind of come up with those. And so some of the emphasis is on exploring that relationship to what's happening. And that may also be relationship to the physical, relationship to what we're seeing, we're hearing, we're feeling. So the practice does kind of emphasize this field of awareness, the field of the mind. And this was another place I feel that Sayadaw Utejaniya really supported, the teachings of Sayadaw Utejaniya really supported my own practice. I feel in many ways he helped me to understand what it means to observe the mind. I knew how to observe objects of mind. I knew how to observe thoughts and emotions, but to kind of observe the qualities of the mind, it's a more diffuse kind of experience to recognize and understand, observe how the mind is in relationship to experience. So this is another big piece about what we'll be exploring this week. And part of the reason for that, why we meditate, really, is to understand the Buddhist aim for the practice is to understand how our minds contribute to the ways in which we struggle and suffer. There are clearly things that go on in the world that we may or may not be able to affect change about. Ways that people act or things that are happening, like there's all this fire and smoke in the Bay Area right now. And I don't have much say about that, but I do have some ability to look at what my relationship to that is and not be tied up in knots or frustrated or angry or fearful, that the mind can have a more balanced relationship with it. And from that place of balance, can choose skillful action. So this is an important piece, first of all, that we begin to find our way towards a more balanced relationship to what's happening in our lives. And that balanced relationship, sometimes when we think about ease with what's happening, we might think, oh, that means, I don't take action. Or, that's where that heads. We might think that's what that means. Equanimity, the teaching of equanimity, of having balanced mind, non-reactivity to what's happening. Our habitual mind tends to kind of believe that reactivity, that relationship of wanting to do something, that the reactivity there is. It's kind of the way or the reason we would do anything. But what we can discover with the mind that becomes more balanced is that out of that balance can come a response that comes from wisdom, from compassion, from care. And so the movement towards learning about how our minds are caught in suffering helps the mind to kind of let go of the extra pieces, the extra ways in which we're reactive to what's happening. But that doesn't mean then that we just sit like and say, oh, well, things as they are, that's what is. It means that with seeing that's what is, we then can step into an action from a place of wisdom and compassion. So this is the purpose of our practice, to understand our minds, to understand that relationship. And it is in this area of our relationship to experience, both that the suffering happens, the extra that we add, the experience of greed, of aversion, of anger, of irritation, those experiences themselves are suffering. So the observation of those creates the conditions for the mind to learn a new relationship to understand that those experiences are not helpful in terms of navigating towards well-being. And yet it is also, so observing the mind helps us to see the ways that we tend to get wound up, tend to get caught, and that supports the mind to learn a new way to relate to experience. And so that is also, looking at the mind is also the place and the way that we find our way towards more ease and peace and wisdom. Again, not the ease and peace of non-action, but the ease and peace of skillful action. So we practice to stabilize our mindfulness, stabilize right mindfulness, so that we can allow this learning to happen. A simple way to define or to describe what the perspective of right mindfulness is. Buddha gave whole teachings about this, and you know, the teaching of wise view, wise understanding. But I'm just going to just keep it really simple for right now and practical. The key perspective we can think of in a simple way for what right mindfulness is being aware of what's happening in the present moment as an experience that's happening in the present moment. Now that may not sound like it's doing anything with being aware, but it's a very different perspective than we usually bring to being aware of our experience. Typically, when we're aware of what's happening in the present moment, we're aware of it as it relates to how can I get more? How can I get rid of what I don't like? How can I figure this out? How can I do something with this? Often relating back to something about me, mine. So the perspective of my view on things is primary in how we relate to experience, as opposed to just like, oh, this is what's happening in the present moment. So for instance, you know, anger. Anger's arising in the present moment. If much of the time, you know, we are not, until we meet this kind of practice, we are not simply aware, this is what it's like to have anger arising in the present moment. That's what it means to be aware of what's happening in the present moment as an experience happening in the present moment. This is the experience of anger happening in the present moment. This is what it's like to be a human being experiencing anger right now. That's not our typical perspective. We typically, this is anger. We may kind of know that we're angry, but we're mostly focused on either the person or the thing we're angry with and how we need to change it or fix it or get rid of it, separate from it, get ourselves away from it, or get somehow obliterate that thing. So this perspective, it's a very simple perspective shift, but not one that's easy necessarily. And so we begin to see what's in the way of that perspective. This is, again, checking in that relationship. So that this is a key in this practice. It's like we notice, we begin to see, oh, this is what's happening. There's an unpleasant experience happening. And the relationship to that is anger. And this is what it's like to feel anger. Or this is what it's like to feel wanting, desire. This is what it's like to feel confusion. Or this is what it's like to feel connection, love. This is what it's like to feel interest. This relationship to experience may have these flavors of greed, aversion, delusion. And they also may have these flavor of wholesome qualities, of love, of compassion, of wisdom, of interest, of joy, of curiosity. So we stabilize, we begin to explore stabilizing the mind with this curiosity about the relationship to experience. This allows the learning to happen. It allows us to learn about what goes on in our minds that tends to take the mind in the direction of suffering and what tends to take the mind in the direction of ease and peace. So the practice that Sayadaw Utteja Nia teaches is primarily what I would call a receptive awareness practice. Rather than choosing an aspect or object to pay attention to, an aspect of experience, many times when we first learn a meditation, we learn to choose to direct the attention to the breath, for example. We aim our mindfulness, we aim our attention at the breath, and we try to stay there. We notice it's pulled off. When we notice it's been pulled off, we come back to the breath. That's what I would call a directed practice. A receptive practice lets go of consciously choosing to control where the attention is, and instead kind of notices that this factor of attention, you know, that the mind is always paying attention to something, and we can choose to pay attention. The factor of attention is amenable to choice, is amenable to that intentionality. But if we aren't consciously choosing, if we're instead kind of resting back and not consciously choosing, the conditioning of our minds will be choosing something to pay attention to. So something always is being paid attention to. And if we are in a receptive mode, we're not consciously choosing what to pay attention to, but instead watching the conditioning unfold, watching, you know, what the mind is most easily noticing in a particular moment. So to some extent, this allows for a very relaxed kind of attention because we're not having to like hold the mind anywhere. And yet it can be challenging because in this receptive style of practice, the attention shifts from experience to experience. And so if you're familiar more with the directed kind of attention, aiming the mind at one particular thing, it can feel a little bit disorienting to watch the attention shift. And so this is a piece of the, you know, if you're not familiar with this kind of receptive practice or have only done receptive practice after a directed practice, you may find that in this practice, it feels a little bit like chaotic at first. But if you can turn around the stance of the meditation to being aware, so know that you're aware, and then what is obvious in each moment? So it's so relaxing. Relaxation is a huge support for our practice. And I'd say for any form of practice, relaxation is a key condition that supports the ability of the mind to be present, to be aware. And if we can relax and choose not to direct the attention, but to receive, okay, relax, there is awareness. And what is coming into awareness? So it can feel like, you know, you're just watching things come in. It also can kind of feel like you're watching the mind move around, shift from experience to experience. It's just a different way of kind of perceiving that. But you can sometimes also just step back, have the feeling of stepping back and letting experience come to you. Maybe almost feeling like you're, you know, instead of being the driver in a car, you're in the passenger seat. You're in the passenger seat. You don't have to make the decisions or choices about changing lanes or where you turn. You can just receive and watch the landscape go by. So that's what we're exploring, is this more receptive mode of practice. So that those are the two key pieces of the practice. It's a receptive rather than a directed of attention. And we explore the relationship to what is being received. So a few kind of tools. Just I'm going to talk for a little bit longer, and then we'll take a short break, and then we'll come back and do a meditation together. So I mentioned relaxation before. Relaxation is a very important support, a condition for the practice. When I met Utejaniya, I had been encouraged to relax before, but in some way, somehow, I could hear it from him. And I think he probably talked about it a lot more. He kept saying, relax, relax, relax. He was much more interested in that my mind was relaxed than what I was noticing. You know, he, in reporting my experience to him, he wasn't so interested in the details of the meditation experience. He wanted to know, first and foremost, was the mind relaxed in its receiving of the experience? And often he could tell from what I was reporting that the mind was not relaxed. So yeah, relax, relax. So relaxation is a huge support. We can start to some extent, you know, we can start a little bit in setting up the meditation with a little bit of directing the attention to seeing, is the body relaxed? Is the mind relaxed? So this is a place that we'll begin when we do the meditation in a few minutes. Relaxing the body, allowing there to be physical relaxation. As the body physically relaxes, it does support and create the conditions for the mind to relax. We may not quite know what it means to relax the mind, but what I'd say is that when the mind is not relaxed, we know that somewhat, you know, the tension, the mental tension, the tightness, the kind of unable to let go of thoughts or worries, concerns, that's mental tension. And there's a way that that can release and relax. Physically relaxing the body helps the mind to be able to relax. And when the mind relaxes, it almost, you know, kind of naturally is aware of the present moment. So this is a powerful support for entry into awareness, stabilizing the mindfulness. It's a simple tool that we can use, relaxing the body, relaxing the mind. And then and then we have three kind of key aspects or tools that support mindfulness practice. Every mindfulness practice uses energy or effort, mindfulness, and concentration. And so there's different ways in which these three are kind of employed, I'd say, in different meditation techniques. So I'm going to talk a little bit about each of these three and how we explore these in the meditation practice we'll be exploring this week. So the first I'll look at is mindfulness. This is the kind of the base of what we're doing here, is cultivating mindfulness, just awareness of what's happening as experience happening in the present moment. So the first piece that Saito Utejaniya recommends or suggests is just noticing that you're aware. Now this is, so just like right now, are you aware? If you're hearing me, if you haven't like spaced out, or you know, if you're hearing me, you can kind of consciously think that question. You are aware. You may not quite know how you know you're aware. That's okay at first. There is a kind of experience that we can get familiar with, what it means that we know that we're aware. there's a kind of a quality, almost, it's just like, almost like turning a light on in a room. You know, we know when we turn the light on in a room that we can see, but what is the light? I mean, we can look right at the light and know something about it, but the way it diffuses through the room and lets us see other things, we often aren't as kind of attuned to the fact that light is pervading the room. We're more attuned to the objects that it lights up. And so kind of like becoming aware of awareness, or becoming aware that we're aware, is kind of like becoming aware of the light, as opposed to the things that that awareness is knowing. We know that we're aware because we know objects, kind of like I know there's light in the room because I can see things. But there's also a way that we can attune to kind of the quality, the pervading quality of light. You know, in the spaces between the objects, the light's almost invisible. But I turn the light off and I know the difference. So this is that kind of sense of like noticing that you're aware. So are you aware? You don't have to kind of look for the experience. Just simply check in. So are you aware? This kind of checking in, or kind of curiosity about am I aware, or is there awareness, begins to help the mind to be interested in the experience of being aware. And this does become important over time, that we can know that we're aware. So knowing that you're aware, and that's just, you can just start there. So you know you're aware. And I'd say to some extent, this is a helpful piece if you're unfamiliar with the way that the mind in the receptive practice, receiving kind of this, sometimes what feels like a barrage of experience. You know, it's like we don't have to try to track every single experience that is happening. We can kind of step back and say, yeah, I know I'm aware, and there's a lot going on. So that's a place that the awareness can help us. We don't have to try to keep track, like the light's on in the room. It's like, there's thousands of things in here. Do I have to name them all? No. It's like, I know that I'm aware, and I know that I'm seeing. So there's kind of a simplification of the experience. So knowing that you're aware, this is a piece of being aware of the mindfulness, of kind of attuning to the experience of mindfulness. And then in a simple way, what is obvious? In a moment, you know, it's like there's something that the attention is kind of naturally aware of. And again, it may or may not be clear at first. You don't have to go looking or try to name or know specifically what it is that you're aware of. There will be times when it's extremely clear. Oh yeah, I'm aware of that pain in my knee. Or, you know, the sound of a chainsaw goes off. It's like, oh yeah, I'm aware of hearing. So there are times when it's very clear, but other times it can be more vague, more like, yeah, I'm aware, and I know that I'm seeing, and I'm breathing, you know. There's the body touching the chair, you know, very broad and light. And this is a place that we may end up using more in the daily life area. This kind of very broad, knowing that you're aware, and kind of having a sense of the fields that we're aware of. The seeing, the hearing, maybe a little bit of how the body is, the inner landscape of the body. Is there tension? Is there ease? In the sitting practice, what can happen is over time, the mind can get very, very clear about very rapidly changing experience. And this is one of the powerful things of this form of practice, that the power of the mindfulness, it's the continuity of the mindfulness that's powerful. So as the mindfulness gains momentum, as there's more moment-to-moment awareness, in the sitting meditation, the mind can get very, very refined in terms of being aware of a thought, of an intention, of a sight, of a sound, of a way that leads to a thought, and a decision. So we can see that. And sometimes as the mindfulness gets strong, we can even see that in our daily lives. But in our daily lives, it's often helpful to kind of have this more stepped back approach. Well, I know I'm aware. And yeah, there's things happening. I know that I'm aware of the seeing, and I'm aware of some kind of tension or tightness in the body. So this is the mindfulness piece. Are you aware? And what is obvious in the moment? And that obvious thing, because it's a receptive practice, that obvious thing may change, or will likely. Sometimes the mind can land on something and just kind of stay there. And you may notice when we do the sitting practice, you know, if you have a familiar way of practicing that uses the breath, for example, you may notice that the attention gravitates there. That's fine. You don't have to not have it stop somewhere and land there for a while. So the experience is just noticing, okay, what is coming to awareness? What's the most easeful thing? What's the most natural thing that the attention is connecting to in this moment? So then the next piece is kind of the effort. How do we make effort? And what I really emphasize here and what Sayadaw emphasizes is just a light touch. I think this is often where the mind gets tight and not relaxed in the meditation, is trying to kind of hold on to experience, trying to stay mindful. It's not that hard to be mindful for a moment. In a moment, right now, can you be aware of your hands? Can you be aware of the contact of your hips against the chair, cushion, or bench? Can you be aware of a breath? Usually, you know, if you were hearing my voice, and usually when I say each of those things, there can be a split second or a moment of the attention just going to that place. I mentioned, notice your hands, and there they are. Not very hard for a moment to be mindful. What's more challenging is to maintain that awareness moment after moment. And that's where we tend to kind of get tight, where the mind tends to kind of get holding on to the experience. So this is the place to explore. It's not that hard to be mindful for a moment. And so can you be aware in this moment? What's obvious in this moment? Just enough attention to connect with that, to know that. This is what's obvious. And then do it again with the same light touch. And then do it again. And again. And again. Now, the saying, doing it again and again and again, if we pick that up and think, oh, I've got to keep doing that, that again may be where the mind gets tight. But it's just enough attention, just enough effort and energy to connect with what's happening for a moment. And then the next moment, just enough for that moment. And in this way, it's kind of like we support the mind to stay present with a very light touch of effort. And so the way the mindfulness becomes more continuous is not infused with tension. And that ends up being really helpful. I often use an analogy, and I will take the time to describe this since I think many of you have not heard this practice before. If you're, you know, that the analogy for kind of developing or creating in a way the momentum to get the mindfulness going. There's these scooters that kids ride, not motor scooters, but these little scooters that are low to the ground. They have two wheels and you have a platform that you balance your foot on and you tap your foot on the ground to get the scooter going. So the, you know, you could potentially, standing on that platform, put your foot down and like push, try to push really hard to go really far. But that probably will tend to be a pretty wobbly experience. It's more helpful to do a light tap, gain your balance, another light tap, gain your balance, another light tap. And then a momentum gets built with balance for that, that to ride that scooter. And so, and after a little while, as the momentum gets going, you don't have to tap as often. You just tap, 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 get the momentum going. Then you can ride for a little while. Then you might notice that the scooter gets a little wobbly, so you know you need to put your foot down and tap again. Tap, tap, tap. Ride again. So you get familiar with knowing when you need to tap and when you can ride. This is a similar kind of thing with this light touch of connecting with experience. Like each moment of noticing, oh, yep, I'm aware in this moment. At first, we have to kind of do that moment after moment. But then a momentum begins to get developed and we start to get familiar with what it means for that to be aware for a little while. And we don't have to kind of like have that kind of intentional connection moment after moment after moment. It's more like we can notice, oh yeah, I'm aware. And then almost like ride that wave of mindfulness for a little while, then start to notice it's getting a little wobbly. Start to notice the mindfulness kind of going, kind of floating out. It's like, oh yeah, let me connect again. Ride the next wave of mindfulness. So the effort that we make in this practice is light touch, moment after moment, and begin to get familiar with kind of that momentum of mindfulness so that we're not, like in, on that scooter, if you're have the momentum of the ride. If you put your foot down and try to tap while you're riding, it's like it gets in the way. It kind of slows you down. And so kind of similarly in the mindfulness, if you're reminding yourself in a way, or kind of like trying to orient, connect, 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 that can get in the way of just watching the flow of, yeah, aware and kind of like riding that wave of awareness. These are experiences that we get more familiar with. The experience of the momentum of mindfulness, what that's like, when that mindfulness gets wobbly. We get more familiar with those as experiences as we practice in this way. And then the way concentration works in this practice is different than some of you may be familiar with. Concentration often we think of as being very focused on one experience, but the concentration in the Buddhist understanding, concentration is the continuity of mindfulness over time. And in some cases, that continuity of mindfulness over time is connected with one particular experience like the breath, and that creates a particular flavor of concentration. Can be very absorbed, very quiet, very still. The experience of the object becomes more and more still as we kind of focus on one object. In this practice, we're not focusing on one experience. We're having, you know, this connection with different experience moment after moment. And this is also a form of concentration. It's called moment-to-moment concentration. It feels different. It doesn't have the same, it's like in the focused concentration, both the awareness gets very steady and the object gets very steady. In the moment-to-moment concentration, the awareness is steady, but the objects are changing. And so it can be a different experience. It's a little different feeling. But that is the way concentration works in this practice. As the mindfulness gets strong and steady, moment to moment, it knows this is what's happening, this is what's happening, this is what's happening. And because it knows moment to moment, this is what's happening, there's not a lot of room for the mind to go out and get reactive about it. It's more just gently acknowledging, this is what's happening in the present moment. And so in both cases, in the steady one-pointed concentration and in the moment-to-moment concentration, the reactivity of mind, greed, aversion, the hindrances to mindfulness, they fall away in both cases. And so this is concentration when those hindrances diminish and the mindfulness is steady. I'll talk more about practicing with the mind wandering as we do the guided meditation. And the last piece I'll mention again is this checking of the relationship. So far, basically what I've described is recognizing that you're aware, noticing what's obvious with a light touch of effort, creating the conditions for a kind of moment-to-moment practice, a moment-to-moment concentration. From time to time in that kind of flow of knowing what's happening, it can be really helpful to check in explicitly. What is my relationship to what's happening? I talked about this early on, the relationship being an important piece of understanding here. And so consciously, from time to time, how am I in relationship to experience? What's the attitude? Sometimes that's the language Sayadaw Tejaniya uses. What's the attitude in the mind right now? How am I in relationship to experience? How is the mind? So there's what's happening and how the mind is in relationship to it. So that piece is helpful to notice. And I mentioned earlier, you know, kind of different flavors of that, and roughly four flavors of attitude that can be present. Three connected with greed, aversion, delusion. You can want something to happen, want to hold on to it, want to get rid of it, get away from it, be confused about it, disconnected, have some idea or belief about it. Those roughly, you know, kind of the greed, aversion, delusion flavors of relationship to experience. So there's what's happening, how am I in relationship to it? The fourth flavor is that of what Sayadaw Tejaniya calls wise attitude, or he calls right attitude. And that is kind of an attitude that allows the mind to be comfortable and at ease with what's ever happening in the present moment. It has many flavors. It can be experienced as balance, calm, peace, ease, love, compassion, delight, joy, interest. So many different qualities can be there in the mind. And so sometimes as we're noticing experience, it may be kind of delight is what's happening in relationship. Or it might be curiosity and interest. So it's useful to notice those. Those are wholesome qualities that actually support the meditation. Now the practice does kind of move in the direction of having wise attitude moment to moment. And that's where we have that concentration. When that concentration deepens, the hindrances fall away and there is wise attitude in the mind. The mind is fine with whatever is happening moment to moment. We get to that place. We get to that the mind moves in that direction, not by trying to get rid of reactivity or trying to get rid of greed, aversion, and confusion, but by recognizing it. And so we find our way towards wise attitude by noticing the unwise attitude, by noticing when the mind is in relationship of greed for its, this is the mind wanting something to happen. As soon as we notice that, as soon as we notice, the mind it wants this, you know, it's leaning towards this. As soon as we notice that, it kind of takes takes that quality of mind out of how we're paying attention, and it becomes just another what we're knowing. And so in noticing that there is the attitude of aversion, for example, of not liking this, it's like, oh, well, there's this unpleasant thing and not liking is happening. We can have a balanced okayness with that. And the mind then begins to learn something about how that aversion or greed works in the mind. And so we're in that place of learning and understanding. So we'll talk about all of this over the course of the week in much more detail, but those are the kind of basic pieces of the practice. So we'll take a 10-minute break right now, and then we'll come back and do a guided meditation. So come back at let's say 10 to the hour, wherever you are. I think we're all hopefully on the hour time zones. So about 10 minutes from now. So see you soon.